Hello, poetry lovers. The next one's been a big favorite. It's one we do at the bookstore when we get calls from people who have given our names out to give recommendations to possible employers that call the store. We just reach into a little basket and we pull out these recommendations at random and read them over the phone to the prospective employers. It's called the John Eaton recommendations. Number one. Yes, I'd be glad to give John Eaton a recommendation. He worked here 3 years and he was a fine young man and ideal employee. If it were possible for him to walk in here today and opening suited his qualifications, I remember little gauzy winged things fascinated him and vice versa. He worked here 3 or 4 days, but I don't remember actually when it was. He had 18 bucks when he left here. You speak English quite well. Do you like American men? Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to dart around and make a hole in the sky. Two. Yes, I'd be glad to give John Eaton a recommendation. He worked here 68 years. Do you like American men? I remember John Eaton and his vast library of pornography. He always said there was a sensation of heat which penetrated into his very vitals whenever he grappled at a tavern or nightclub with another pornographer in homage to his lord and master, the Prince of Darkness. Three. Yes, I'd be more than happy to give John Eaton a recommendation. He had a fine record, high scores on every sort of test. Several commendations from his superiors. Used to keep us all in stitches with his tales about exploring Louisiana with LaSalle. I remember he had a thing about smoking cigarettes on a toothpick. Whatever charm can be said to be, he told us plenty of times. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go strum a few heads for Uncle Sam. Four. John Eaton was never what you'd call a regular employee, or like somebody who drifted in one day and started talking about starting a detective agency on company time. He'd go on about it for hours. I remember how he'd often get to blinking and sputtering and speak of being able to master any task because his mind and eyes were trained to grasp a picture in 1/10 of the normal time. Who'd you say? Johnny? I remember he had some sort of scabby wasting sickness that was just as brave as could be about it. Always tried to pass it off as the result of excessive involvement in Weight Watchers. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go mess with the concept of time. Five. Yes, I'd be glad to give John Eaton a recommendation. He worked here 6 weeks, and it was regrettable that we no longer had a niche in which to fit him, but he was strictly a victim of communist witch hunts. Have you ever been afraid of dying? I remember John Eaton standing at the water cooler for quite long periods every day, sometimes for hours, and he'd be patting his groin area and winking as he hailed each one of us and asked how we'd like to drink from a cup that was never empty. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to ask who sent you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have 2 beautiful car hops in the room. Six. Yes, I'd be more than happy to give John Eaton a recommendation. He worked here 3 years and he was a fine young man, an ideal employee with many injuries. But I don't remember when that was. I don't remember. Buzz be buzz. Seven. John Eaton. I remember his feet were so enormous he couldn't wear regular shoes. And that's all I'm at liberty to say. No, I can't let you speak to anyone else. You know how it is when you start painting as though you'd run a mile and shivering in a cold sweat from one end of your body to another. It's a cinch when you catch that old black lung, black lung, as John Eaton would say. Now, if you'll excuse me, I just happen to be looking for Carl Sandburg's feces. Eight. John Eaton, he was never what you'd call a regular employee, more like a delivery boy for the coffee shop downstairs. He used to hit the pipe so much we'd find him stretched out on the stairs 3 or 4 times a day. Speak English quite well. Now, if you'll excuse me, I remember it was John Eaton's pleasure to be on the Smithsonian mailing list and collect old tires. Nine. Yes, John Eaton used to work here. He had a fine record. He used to keep us in stitches with his tales about meeting the Prince of Darkness at rodeos. Ugh. She'd seen the way his mouth looked when he talked about something too filthy to repeat here. Although I sort of remember it had to do with being able to master any task because he was opening a detective agency near the water cooler. Do you like American men? Some spiders? Judo? 10. Yes, I'll be happy to tell you about John Eaton. You have made me so very lewd. He was never a regular employee, more like a person we felt sorry for and then come in and use the toilet. Got morbid and stayed awake 10 days once. He worked here 3 years and saw gauzy winged things in his honor, and I'd walk in here today and work here 3 years. Now, if you'll excuse me, I intend to become a mountain olive. 11. Oh, sure, I remember John Eaton. God, yes. Only his real name was Estes Kefauver. He was with us several months last summer. He had 18 bucks when he left here. On his days off, he chased pussy like a maniac. He was a master of judo, but he was strictly a victim of dark emotions. He had a fine record. He had lupus. He had a thing about smoking Carl Sandburg's feces on a toothpick. Yes, I'll be more than happy to sort of test several commendations. Become moody. Now, if you excuse me, I have to go live on in print after the oral necessities. This last one is going to be something of an extravaganza, so it's going to be Blaster and the Blasterites doing a poem that's dedicated to gobbling. So I'm going to ask all the folks out there that are in the Blasterites that are going to be helping me to come up on stage, and those that are going to be seated in chairs, I think there are a couple of people seated in chairs, bring a chair up with you.
Damn, too much talent on this thing.
You like to sing? This is the poem I normally read at Thanksgiving, so you can just think of this as Thanksgiving. Instructions to the Blasterites will be that when you see my arm go up like this, start your parts, and when you see my arm go up the second time, if you can see that far, stop. This is a poem called Not Ideas About the Gobbling, but the Gobbling Itself. And it starts with a little piece from Cardinal Newman, who said, "My man, you are writing a romance." All this gobbling, it's a major throat creating a merger of science and the religious perspective, and hence raises the question of creatureliness in much out-to-lunch gobbling. Have you ever thought about gobbling for money? You have the talent. Have you ever called upon the deepest racial memory of gobbling till gobbling to you became terribly wet and opened, and in the same way, and of course, as way far bright saw a flame cannot leap very high if a rock is placed upon it. Gobbling is a rock placed upon the flame of gobbling, or to travel to a blurry thing, a strict living example of gobbling amnesia. Something that wakes to find itself wandering with blood on its hands in a strange neighborhood, dressed as a neurotic conflict between two conflicting pastimes, glue sniffing and mountain climbing, is to characterize gobbling as the principle of competition for the imagined loss of scissors. Hello, and into the past sharing characterizes gobbling as the process of unknown teamwork, where the she keeps her cool and gobbles, and the he loses his and gobbles, and before it can hit the house, the she still gobbling heads off the runaway tractor, and the he goes staggering in the ditch like an idiot, and the he goes on gobbling there helpless, so it's their combined gobbling that saves the house. Poor weak Pierre, the gobbler Abelard, and a certain plucky young maiden by the name of Gobbling Heloise. Whereas on the other hand, the more contemporary expression, Himmel is the one who smells the books, is without any gobbling at all. Well, it's much the dimmer for it. Dimmer even than your dad's creamed waistband void in action, using rabbit fur but no discernible gobbling, part of the magic act he did for children's birthday parties until the PTA stopped him. Scranton, dipsomania!
Let's go.
Stop that dance!
Together.
Let's go do it.
It would be like entering the foyer in a roadhouse on Thanksgiving afternoon.
That's it. That's my best. That's it.
Just a tuneless sort of humming at first, and then it starts vocalizing not well. The torch song called, I shall gobble at you presently, my dear. I shall gobble at you presently, my dear. So make the most of this, your own little gobbling, your little gobbles, your little half a gobbles, ere I forget to gobble or die gobbling or move away gobbling. And we are done forever gobbling by and by. I shall gobble at you as I said, but now, if you gobble at me with your loveliest gobble, I will gobble at you with my favorite gobble. I would indeed that gobbling were longer lived, and gobbles were not so brittle as they are. But so it is, and gobbling has contrived to gobble on without a break thus far. Whether or not we find that we are gobbling is idle, gobblingly speaking. Oh, it will be as if the spirit of gobbling itself came in and swept around. That's right. It will be as though something like Loretta Young came in and swept around the room, gobbling preciously like the demands of some spoiled colostomy pouch, intractable with normal phone and taxi travel, when you were gobbling there yourself in the room where the six gobblers had been, gobbling Bob, gobbling Ann, gobbling Larry, gobbling Ruth, and you, the bedecked sideshow gobbler, and the sixth, the mystery gobbler, whose part in this never came clear till the frozen sirloin steak on the pillow suddenly burst out gobbling in a dummy voice, the ventriloquist gobbler. Of course, and that was part of it, the ventriloquist gobbler crouching behind the drapes, throwing his voice while the sirloin steak lay on the pillow and dripped and gobbled out this pathetic routine at you as though you were family attending its deathbed gobble scene.
I presume that you, my dear ones, do not at all remember, or remember hardly at all, the highly important period of your existence which anteceded your birth and which transpired in your mother's womb. But, yes, I remember this period as though it were yesterday. So I quit my job yesterday and went down to the corner for a beer at Red Man's Tavern. There as I half-dozed in my usual crouch at the back table near the bumper pool, and the voices and the liquid sounds of the tavern mixed themselves with my own vague mental impressions, the pre-uterine memories continued to flow and double back on me both ways, like the gurgling reportedly heard by Marie Le Breton on Low Sunday, April 12th in 1249, when she was standing among the marigolds watching the animals jump in the park and listening to her own stomach gurgle its hunger up at her, and a large man dressed in black whom she did not know came through the animals and marigolds right up to her and asked, among other things, if she would care to watch him smoke a cigarette with his navel. She said, naval action like death sent down to the very bricks is always the symbol of the retreating waters, said the man in black, hearing Marie Le Breton's stomach gurgle. To which she responded that actually, if the truth be known, oh, she would much rather he wipe a big sirloin steak on her butt. But what? Asked the sirloin steak on the pillow. Its dummy voice sounded querulous more than a little peeved. It started to ask the question again, but what one does not know at any rate comes to ask the question again, but what one does not at any rate come to ask the question again, knowing time, one is the last to know at the time. So the steak's questions became less pointed, and at that very moment, a second runaway tractor hit the house. What was this story's relationship to gobbling?
Thou shalt touch my neck! Thou shalt touch my neck! Thou shalt touch my neck!
Who the hell put my damn
sock? Thou shalt touch my neck!
have come for, or because of.
Well, I think when you say Christy aside, first of all, do you remember the way your mind has been slipping gears lately when your preoccupation becomes such? After counting the 3,954 dust specks on the blinds, you spend literally hours peering out between them where a movement, any movement at all out there, gets it going as a sign the relationship between you and you or who is always gobbling or being warned the fuck not to. Sanity is pressing its hands over its ears. Semi-canals lining up. Step-like arrangements. There's a low red brick wall about 3 feet high running between the brick barbecue pit and the pool of black, tarry, sludge-filled oil, or the deep hollow you feel refers to the attempt to penetrate the secrets of nature. But the gist of this is the cavalcade of intimations of gobbling, catching as measles and unassaged as the gobbling from this our life goes on, being drawn from the scuttle scuttle, the gobbling life, not, but preserve, listen, preserve your gobbling habit when gobbling shoots out, shaking its whiskers. Pray you are home and among a bevy of gobblers, friends. Feeding trough, not 2 inches from your nose in dirty gobbletown. Home and fairly alert, not unmindful of the risks involved. Because, listen, on Saturday afternoon, Billy Buck, the farmhand, raked the last of the old year's haystack and built the nest and settled down to gobbling so long and monotonously the sheriff had to be phoned. It was then, of course, that they saw gobbling was the code name for gerbling.
I have come.